Hello again. This is Dolores Cannon with the Metaphysical Hour. And we're live tonight. And when we were on our six-week trip we just got back from, one of the people came up to me and they said, you keep saying you're live tonight, but you don't give a date. So they don't know if it's really live or not. So this is live, and tonight is July the 29th, 2011. Mm-hmm. That way you can sure that it is a live show tonight. I forgot about that, that they replay those, and she said...
Because you didn't used to, but now you are giving the date every week.
Yeah, but then she said, you said it's live, and we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Julia's here, too, and we just got back from a long six-week tour all over the United States. So we're going to be talking a lot about what we discovered on that, but then also hoping we'll get some callers in. Let me give out the toll-free number. Seth said this is a new one that they've just started up, so the old one isn't in effect anymore. The new toll-free number is 888-627-6008. 888-627-6008. Okay, and we came back right into the oven. They said on the news just now, 25 days of over 100 degrees here.
Here?
Yeah, that's what they said on the news. And with no rain, and so everything is burned up, the grass and everything. But just now we had a tiny shower.
That I heard all the grass going, yay!
And it at least kind of settled the dust. But they were talking about down in Texas, they got that big storm coming in. They said for the first time, nobody cares. They want a tropical storm to hit there because they really need the rain down there bad.
Mm-hmm.
So for the first time, a tropical storm is welcome.
Very good news. Yeah.
So they do have some benefits anyway. But we started out on this trip in, what was the middle of 20? It was middle of June,
and
I can't even remember.
It was the 21st of June.
When we left here, right after our conference, we started out on this. And we decided we're not going to do any more of those around the United States tours.
There's... Well, definitely not right behind our conference. That was too much to put a conference and then a tour. And it was just, that was so much. It seemed like, and then at the same time as your three waves coming out. It was three major things we had going on all at once. And that was a bit much.
Yeah, and we hadn't even really recovered from putting on the conference, and that's a big deal to do that. But we did it because we did it last year. But we're not going to do it again, because especially that close, because that was just too much. And we were on the road for a whole 6 weeks. But we started out the middle of June. We went to where my older daughter lives in Front Royal, Virginia, which is just outside of Washington, D.C. So we were in that area, and there we just gave a lecture.
Right.
And then we went up to Boston, and there we had lecturing classes up there.
Mm-hmm.
So we've had five classes on this trip of the first part of the hypnosis school.
Level one classes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then we had three level twos.
Right.
So it's been really busy, and every place we've had lectures. So we went to Boston. Then we went up into Canada, up to Sudbury. And I've never been up there, and I'd never even heard of Sudbury before. But it turned out...
A lot of people kept saying, what are you doing here in Sudbury?
That's what they kept saying. What are you here for?
Yeah, we're not sure why we're guided to go to some of the places that we go to, but we do. We are, and we do. So that's
Well, people ask us to come, but we never know what there's going to be when we get there. But Sudbury turned out to be a very interesting place. I'd never heard of it. But it was much larger than I thought. We drove in, you couldn't tell because it's kind of spread out.
Mm-hmm.
But it's 120,000 people up there. But it's got an interesting history. And I found out a lot from the cab drivers, and then some other people sent me some stuff about it, that underneath Sudbury, it's the second largest crater in the world.
Underneath it, or that is something?
That whole area there, because they said almost 2 billion years ago, a huge meteorite crash there. They said it was as big as Mount Everest. Now, that's a huge piece of rock.
Could that be the meteorite that you talk about in your books that brought the bacteria? Or
that's what some of these people have sent me stuff about it, because there have been a lot of speculation.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a huge piece of rock to crash. But, you know, back in those days, that was about the time that one planet.
I was just going to say, I bet it was a piece of that planet.
But it exploded.
Mm-hmm.
The one that is where the asteroid belt is now. In my work, we found out there was a planet there, and when it blew up, the pieces went everywhere. And they said Earth would have been hurt even more, but it was behind the sun when it hit. Otherwise, it would have got a lot more damage. But that in the things I get in my work, and, you know, it's not really scientifically proven, but I keep getting the same information over and over again. They said this is what happened to Mars, and when it blew up, it took all of the atmosphere from Mars. But it did have a lot of meteorite damage on the moon and also the Earth. And any large round bodies of water was caused by one of these meteorite pieces. But this was about the time, I think, it would have been. But they said this huge piece hit where Sudbury sits now, and it ended up, it's one of the biggest mining operations in the world. They said it's just about the deepest mine in the world, go all the way down to that. And they were telling us while we were there, there's all kinds of metal that are extracted out of that, nickel, and I don't remember what the other ones were. There was a whole lot of different metals and some gold, but mostly other metals. And the cab driver said, without that mining industry, Sudbury wouldn't even exist, because everybody there has something to do with the mines. But they're very, very deep, and they're pulling this metal out all the time. And I noticed something strange while we were there. The energy was different.
Yeah, the energy was different, definitely. We were having issues with energy there. I remember.
Yeah, because, you know, everywhere we go, it seems like we end up in vortex areas where there is strange energy. But this was a strange energy there, because
I just heard that we are the vortex that we feel.
Haven't you heard? Okay.
Yes.
But because when I was doing my class, at first I was all confused, and I never get confused.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it was like there was something there, and we kept saying, well, maybe it's coming out of the ground. From where that is.
Mm-hmm.
But they said also it's the only place in the world where a lake is completely surrounded by a city.
Mm-hmm.
That lake there at Sudbury. It's beautiful. It has mountains around it and the lake. But there was this unusual type of energy that was very noticeable there. But imagine the deepest mine in the world. They go way down to where that meteorite is, I guess, or the remnants of it, and they're extracting all that metal out of it. But
I wonder what caused them to ever go look for it in the first place. How would they know it was there?
Oh, I guess the same mining, way they do with all kinds of mines.
Yeah.
I don't know. Most of the mines, like the gold mines out west, they would find in the water.
Yeah, and then they know that there was something there.
They trace it back to the mountains. I don't know. They didn't have metal detectors back in those early days.
How do we know? That's what I'm thinking of. I mean, we're thinking, oh, they didn't have this and this, and it's like, who's to say they didn't? They had some way of detecting.
Well, I don't know
somehow
how they do
knew.
Mines at all, but this one is the deepest in the world and the second largest crater in the world, so it goes way beyond just where Sudbury is. They said some of the remnants that were broken off of the meteorite when it fell go all the way down into Michigan.
Wow.
So that's really over a long area, a big area. But something somebody else sent to me I didn't know about is down there underneath the ground, there is a observatory built down there, like a laboratory, an observatory. And it is, they said, 6,800 feet below the surface. So it's way down there in one of those mines. And it's called the Neutrino Observatory. And they said right now it's not operating, but for many years the 90s into the beginning of the 2000s, they were monitoring the neutrinos from the sun.
What's a neutrino?
Oh, tiny things.
Okay, so neutrinos from the sun, what they're monitoring, I don't understand what they're monitoring.
Well, it said they were monitoring it to see the effects of the sun on the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And that it started back in the 1960s. It says it was the first time they ever began measuring solar neutrinos reaching the Earth. And they were doing a lot of experiments. But then when they built this, it was really effective because it was so far down, 6,800 feet down into the ground, that it was away from solar radiations.
So solar neutrinos are like tiny particles, solar particles or something?
Yeah, and it affects the Earth.
Okay.
They keep talking about how the Earth is...
And they're talking about the solar flares.
Yeah, but this
like
is
that.
This is particles that come off of it and reach the Earth.
Okay.
And I think they're always trying to see the effects on people and on Earth altogether. Uh-huh. I'm not a scientist. I only have the papers here that people send us. But it was a detector. It said it was designed to detect solar neutrinos. And what they did, they have a whole laboratory built down there, 6,800 feet. And they built this huge, it says here, the largest man-made underground cavity in the world. And then that, they put this huge thing of heavy water. And I know all I know with heavy water is that it used to have something to do with the atomic bomb and radiation and atomic.
That's probably what we're feeling.
But it's down there, and it's huge, and they did, the laboratory would send these, especially if you can correct me, anybody out there, send it into this tank of heavy water so it could be neutralized and analyzed that way.
Mm-hmm.
And it was away from any other background radiation. That's why it's so deep. And it's the deepest in the world where that mine is down there. And it's the largest man-made underground cavity in the world that houses this whole detector.
Hmm.
So I think that's interesting. But they said they'd done tons of research with the neutrinos that came off the sun. And that now they say they've shut it down and now they're doing analyzing. But there's still a laboratory down there that's working on a lot of this other thing.
So they shut down the observatory part, but they're still analyzing. So that means they're still open.
That's what I would think. But, that could be. We didn't realize that. It's right underneath us,
yeah.
Even though it is all that way down into the ground. It
doesn't matter.
Maybe that's what we were feeling.
I think so. Because it was like... Especially you, I don't remember what I was feeling so much, but you were getting, it was confusing you, it was like doing something.
Yeah, it was okay in the lecture, but then I started my class, and I usually just do it by remote control, I've done
it
so much,
right.
And I got confused, and I said, this is really unusual, I said, I can feel some kind of energy that's getting my thoughts confused.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the people in the class could feel it, too.
I think so. I think there was like one or two times when I was up in that front part. It had to do with being right there.
Right in the front of the room.
Usually I'm in the back of the room. Was being in that front part, it was like a thought would just leave. It was that kind of thing. It would just be gone. You know, it was like you're working and it was just gone.
That's what I mean by confusion, because normally I'm just like you press the tape recorder and it all comes out. And, you would think of something and then you couldn't get it back.
Right.
But... the others in the room said they could feel energy, but a lot of them live there. They're probably used to it.
Right.
I wonder how that kind of radiation would affect people and live right on top of it.
Yeah.
Of course, they say it's shut down, but, there's a lot of things in America.
They say.
Yeah. I've had a lot of experience with that they say the government says these things aren't operating anymore, and then we find out they are.
Well, that's what I meant by it. It may not be observing, but it's still open because it's analyzing. So that means it's still, there's still stuff going on.
Yeah.
That could be all it takes. Just because they're not observing doesn't mean nothing's happening.
Because imagine the laboratories that are going to study something that tiny.
Mm-hmm.
And So there's a lot of exciting experimental stuff going on. And they did say this may have something to do with the collider experiment, too.
Hmm.
And, you know, we studied that right. when I was writing my book about the three waves.
Yeah.
The collider experiment, where that's also the largest tunnel in the world where they're building that. This is the largest underground cavity. Everything is the largest.
The largest. Well, eventually they're going to tap into these underground cities that are up, and if they keep going down far enough, my goodness.
Yeah, because we know they're down there.
I heard they already know about them. They've already done it.
They probably have.
I would think so, because they keep, somebody must, I mean, they have to, because they keep going. How far can we go?
Because they said, you know, that all of this is in the crust of the earth, and you could only go so many miles, and then you're going to get into the underground cities.
Yeah.
And in my work, we found out that the entrances to a lot of them are underneath the pyramids. Mm-hmm. And the entrances to the underground cities were built before the pyramids were. And then a lot of the survivors of Atlantis went down there. And it's, I don't remember which book of mine we have about that, but they said that there is like a miniature sun.
Yeah. Right.
And they have daylight. It'd be like 24 hours of daylight.
Mm-hmm.
But that was put down there by the ETs. And it has water, it has cities, and it has dinosaurs, it has all kinds of animals. And they said their computer system is way, way beyond anything we could even imagine. It's so advanced. And they have transportation. They can go up to 3,000 miles an hour. So they can get from one part to the other real fast. But because they're not involved in war and all these other things, they've had a lot of time to really develop their technology, and that they have highly technical computer systems, not at all like ours.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I remember that's in book two. It's in one of them.
It's in one of them. It's one or two.
About the hidden cities.
Yeah.
But there's a whole civilization, and they said they have no desire to mix with us at all.
Mm-hmm.
I don't blame them. They're quite peaceful down there. And when I first began getting this information, it reminded me, those of you who are been in metaphysics for a long time, as long as I have, do remember about Admiral Byrd whenever he was exploring on the North Pole, and that he discovered the entrance to an underground city. And he was reporting about that. And, oh, he was criticized, and the skeptics. He was with the Navy, and the Navy completely, what do you want to call it? They blackballed him, went against everything. They said he was hallucinating, that this couldn't have been.
Mm-hmm.
But he said he went into an underground city where there were dinosaurs and all kinds of things under there.
Mm-hmm.
But then he tried to find it again many times, the entrance. He never could find the entrance again.
Huh.
So he was criticized for most of his life after that he made up this whole story. But who's to say?
Well, that's like, what isn't it that one of Jules Verne's stories? The Journey to the Planet of the Earth.
Center of the Earth.
Yeah. And didn't, when they do that, weren't there dinosaurs and things? And, you know?
Well, they said Jules Verne's and H.G. Wells were way ahead of their time.
Right.
That they were, what they were writing about.
They knew things. They knew things.
They said the things they were writing about was not really science fiction.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And they were way ahead of their time. But anyway, who's to say if they keep going down, they will.
Right.
I had a man who contacted me. This has been several years ago when my books first came out here in Arkansas. He said he works for the engineers or whatever it is with the government.
Right.
Where they're working underground. And here we're in the middle of nowhere out here in the mountains, but he said they were building tunnels out here in the mountains for whatever reason. And I know people that said, even in the out here in the middle of nowhere, they could hear things underground, like there's something going on down there.
Mm.
And he said, yes, they were building tunnels through these mountains. But he said when they were doing it, they broke through into a different tunnel system that they knew nobody alive had built.
Mm-hmm.
It was appeared to be man-made, but the walls were like they had been, like with a laser beam.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
they were very slick and smooth, these tunnels, not like anything they could have ever done. Mm-hmm. And they broke through to that. And he told me, well, one of these, he said, I'll get some more information. I never heard from him again, but if you're out there, I've always been interested in getting some more of the story. But he wasn't with them anymore, but he was just telling what happened when he was working with them. There's a lot of mysteries that people mm-hmm. don't know about. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I don't know if they followed those tunnels or if they had enough nerve to do it or just sealed it back up.
Right.
With a different direction.
Something tells me they probably are curious. They sent people. They may not have done it themselves, but they sent people to go find out.
And if they don't come back.
Cameras. So they would feed back to them.
So there's a whole lot of things that we don't know about in this world that's amazing.
This world, our home.
So whenever I write about these things, they may sound weird and like they can't possibly be, but believe me, they're not as strange as some of the things I hear when we're taking these trips.
Right. Well, all you have to do is fly a few times over. Right. When we were flying from just even Phoenix to here, there's a lot of land that has no people on it.
Yeah.
Just in that span right there. And that's not that far. I mean, then you consider the other parts around there, even north of there and everything, and then other parts of the world that are even more desolate than that. There's a lot of this earth that does not have people on it, that all kinds of things.
But when we flew over the outback in Australia, right. I mean, you said it was like flying over another planet.
Right. So you have, my point being that you have all this area. I mean, it's like this is a huge planet. I mean, I know we get caught up in our day-to-day lives in our little towns and cities, and it's like that's all there is. But all you have to do is fly like that, and then you realize, no, this is a big place with a lot of area that a lot can be done.
Well, when we were flying driving that time from Albuquerque mm-hmm. down to Roswell, and we went through miles and miles of nothing.
Nothing. Straight as an arrow highway, this huge highway.
And every once in a while, we'd see a house way off on a hill. And I said, who in the world would ever live out there? There was the middle of nowhere. Of course, down there is the Los Alamos White Sands Project. And they said they built that, was it a four-lane highway mm-hmm. to nowhere, was to take the radioactive material down to the Carlsbad Caverns. Mm-hmm. But that's the only thing it's used for. There's no people. We saw a few ghost towns, and that mm-hmm. was about it.
Right.
And it's the same thing when you go from Las Vegas to Laughlin for the UFO conference.
Right.
Talk about the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And I always said when we were going through there at night, and the rocks and everything in the desert, there could very easily be UFOs out there.
Oh, absolutely. That's why they're great sighting areas. Same with Sedona. They have a lot of sightings they'll do out there, too.
Because there's nothing
mm-hmm.
there.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a great way to hide, is around those rocks.
So, you know, who's to say what I write about isn't true? It's just I'm finding it, and I mm-hmm. know it's there. Other people know about it, too.
Right.
But anyway, Sudbury was an interesting place, and I didn't expect all of that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Then after that, we went to Portland. Flew all the way across the United States to Portland. And Portland is a very nice city. And they were saying there, it very rarely even gets to 90 degrees.
Yeah, that was what was interesting, that whole northern part. You know, here we're hearing about the heat wave
here
in Arkansas and it being the hottest. And we're up there where it's...
Canada, Boston, Canada.
All of it. And we just kept hovering up in that area, and it was just so nice. You know, like you say, it doesn't even get to, what did you say, 90?
You said 90 in Portland.
But it was saying 70s, 80s when we were there. It was cool. And
we're hearing about where we live being mm-hmm. having this awful heat wave. But, Dee Wallace, you know, she was the one who was at our conference.
Mm-hmm, right.
The movie star, and she was a... her main movie was E.T.
The most well-known movie.
But we found out she's also done about 140 other movies. She's done all kinds of things. And after the conference, we asked her if she would join us on this tour. Originally, we were going to have Blair Styra join us again, like he did last year, but he wasn't able to do it this year.
Right.
So we said, okay, Dee, do you want to go with us? Well, she agreed. She couldn't do all of the stops, but she did do Boston. She
right.
joined up in Boston.
Mm-hmm. And that was fantastic, yeah.
Oh, and then she joined up with us in Portland.
Portland, right. Mm-hmm.
And Sedona.
Right.
She couldn't come to all of them. But, oh, she is a firecracker.
Yeah.
She really knows how to stir the audience up. She has so much energy.
Well, if any of you are not familiar with her work, you really need to check her out. She's really into some very, very good stuff, and her whole method is just fantastic. And it breaks right through any barriers you have.
Well, we're not saying that because we have published two of her books, but that's why we published them, mm-hmm. because we saw what she had to offer.
Absolutely, and totally resonate with it. And so, of course, I mean, that's the way it has to be. We only endorse people that, I mean, that's why who you publish. That's who we publish, and only people that we believe in, you know, and we believe in their work. So
I say time and time again, I don't publish junk.
That's right.
Have to be people that we understand the work and believe in it, and that I back them 100%. But one of the books of hers that just came out in time for the conference is called The Big E. And as I read it, and her other one, Conscious Co-Creation.
Conscious Creation.
Mm-hmm. That one is coming out now. Mm-hmm. I found out she just has a different name for the same thing that I'm working with.
Right.
What I call in my work the subconscious, or my students are calling it the superconscious, or the SC.
Right.
But this is the power that I work with and get my information from. She calls it the big E,
yeah.
which means energy, mm-hmm. which is the same thing.
Yeah,
it's just
absolutely.
Huge energy force, and she's learned how to work with it and mm-hmm. how she teaches people how to work with it in their daily lives.
Right.
So she has really good lectures that she really lets it all out. So it was a real honor to be with her. And
she's a wonderful person.
Oh, yeah, and we really got to know her well on this trip.
Yes.
Spent so much time with her.
Yeah, well, she's genuine, and that's...
She's real.
Yeah, absolutely. We don't know fake people. I'm seeing that.
No.
They don't stay with us very long if we do get around fake people.
No, I think we would be able to see through them pretty quickly if they were snobs or wannabes or, you know, the ones that aren't real. We could see through it pretty quick.
Right.
But she joined up with us in Portland, and also there was a fantastic lecture there, and she took my class there too. But then we went down to Palm Springs,
right.
California, another place we had never been.
Right.
And that's like an oasis in the middle of the desert. It's got mountains all around it, big mountains and desert, but it's just palm trees. It's just like a little oasis right in the middle of the desert.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And that one, Dee didn't have to go to that one because at that lecture and class, Lindsay Wagner lives mm-hmm. down there.
Right.
So she came and was couldn't do her entire presentation.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But she did the introduction, and she was working with us down there.
Yeah, she did a meditation, so that was really nice.
Mm-hmm. She does what she called a Nietzsche or something.
Diksha.
Yes, it's an Indian. Something she got from India.
And the oneness blessing.
And she usually mm-hmm. does that, but she said, if she had done that before I did my lecture, everybody would have been asleep.
Because they have to process for 30 minutes after they do that. So then they'd be processing that and then come back up to process your information. And it was like, it would be a really long evening.
It's like a long meditation. It puts mm-hmm. them down, and then I'd have to bring them back up again.
Mm-hmm.
So she decided she wouldn't do that at ours because we didn't want that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really nice to meet up with her again because she was at our conference last year. And right after we got back home, I saw her on Sci-Fi Channel
mm-hmm.
with the Warehouse 13. And so she's doing a lot of TV.
Mm-hmm.
And Lindsay is a fantastic person also.
We got
to meet her son, and that's like I said, we only go with genuine people,
mm-hmm.
real people.
Yep. No robots for us.
No. But I want Julie to tell you one of the biggest things that happened to her in Palm Springs.
Which those
about Mary.
Yeah. Well, it just goes. I mean, I said a long time ago. I mean, those of you that don't know, and you probably don't know on this one, but I'm probably Barry Manilow's original fan. Okay, so that'll give you an idea of how old I am. But I was probably one of the first ones. I saw his potential on the very first thing that I heard and stuff, and so I've been his fan ever since. I'm not one of these fans that go all around hopping to different people and stuff. I waited until the right one came along. It was him, and I've stuck with him ever since.
Okay.
And anybody who knows me can tell you that. Anyway, so, and it's been several years ago now. It just came to me. It was very strong, and I heard I would meet him someday. And I was just like, okay, I'm going to meet him someday. And I was just that, so I just put it out there.
Yeah, pie in the sky. Yeah,
absolutely,
you know,
absolutely.
We've seen him in concerts,
yes,
but...
Uh-huh. Anyway, and I just always like, yeah, how's that going to happen? And then, so I just kind of, that's it. Anyway, so this trip, it was a huge step closer. step closer to that, whatever.
The reality you're trying to create.
Well, okay. And it's not that I'm trying to create, I just put it out there. Hey, you did it, so why can't I? You
sure.
Know? So, I mean, it's just out there. If it happens, fantastic.
Okay.
So, anyway, I don't...
We found out that he lives there.
Yeah, well, I had heard that he lived there before, but, you know, he has a show that he does in Las Vegas, and so I just knew that he lived there. And then the person that was helping us coordinate the event, I knew that he knew of him living there. That's all I knew. I didn't know any more than that. So, anyway, somehow it came up in conversations, and then it found out that he actually had done courier service for Barry.
It worked
and,
for him. Uh-huh.
And had done a little work for him, running errands for him and stuff as a courier for him. And anyway, long story short, he got permission from Barry's assistant for us to go to his gate, the gate of his house, and have a picture made in front of the gate. Now, that's a big deal, okay?
It is.
You know, and apparently Barry was leaving. He was leaving that day, was going to be gone for 10 days to be on a tour promoting his latest album. And he said if he wouldn't have been leaving, then he might have been able to arrange a meeting. And, you know, it's actually just a picture in front of the gate, just to be that close, that's probably all I could handle at this point. So it was wonderful. The gate is beautiful. Just, you know. So anyway, we went
there. The security camera.
Yeah, the security camera and stuff. So that was a big deal. So, but it definitely was showing me here's one huge step closer.
Uh-huh.
And so don't be afraid to put big things out there because it's weird how things maneuver around, you know. I mean, that was a lot of years ago, and somebody might say, well, it's not really, you know, how is that anything to do with it? But I put it out there a long time ago, you know, and then
and
I just let it go.
Who's to say?
A lot of things have to maneuver. So, yeah, who is to say?
Well,
so, anyway, that was fun. That was cool.
But he said that Barry doesn't stay the night in Las Vegas.
Right. He flies back and forth every night.
Yes,
or every day.
His own plane.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And he wants to sleep in his own bed there in Palm Springs.
Yeah. I don't blame him. Palm Springs had a beautiful energy. And I don't blame him at all for not wanting to stay in Las Vegas. That's a crazy place.
That's a chaotic energy there.
Yeah, that's different. So I don't blame him.
So that was interesting that she got that. But then she likes to get away from me every once in a while, so she decided to take a tour on her own.
Well, there's some things that are happening right now that are, you know, I have a life too, and if I feel guided to do something, then I do it. And it's maybe in another direction or whatever. And through an interesting set of events, I was guided to someone that lives there, actually. It was just kind of funny. And he's a composer of spiritual music, and he had he has an extraordinary story of something that happened to him when he was young. But ever since that, apparently this music just comes through. He says the angels come to him and just play through him. But it's beautiful music. His name is Frederick Delarue, And that's his website. It's frederickdelarue.com. So, I mean, I encourage everybody to go see it. He's got some music on his site, and he has some things that are out there free for people to download. It's just gorgeous music that comes through. But he does these spiritual tours.
But he doesn't publicize them.
No, he doesn't at all. He said he feels, you know, people just find him. If they find him, then they are meant to be there. So, see, that's one more thing of, you know, that makes it even very, very special. And so it's almost like, because I talked to people that were there, that lived there, and they knew nothing about this. And that's what he told me. He says, I don't advertise locally. I just have my website, and then people just feel drawn. If they feel drawn to come to me, then they're supposed to be there.
The local people don't even know the things you saw.
Exactly, yeah. But one of the things that he felt very strong about is what Palm Springs was actually founded on, was this angel on the rock. That's what how it actually the city ever formed.
Oh.
So it actually formed from a spiritual basis.
Uh-huh.
And because when they were coming across, this is my understanding of his story, when they were coming across
the desert,
the whatever, yeah, to go to probably Los Angeles, to get to the ocean.
To get to California.
Right. They were going across these mountains, and all of a sudden this one man, he saw the angel. He's like, oh, and he stopped everybody, the angel. And so they all had to stop and just stay there. And you know, and whatever for a while and stuff. And so little by little, that's what happened is that it was the angel. Everybody came there for the angel. And so that's how the city was formed. But then over the years, and the celebrities started coming, and I guess it lost all of that, you know, what it was truly there for in the beginning. So that's where he was drawn there 10 years ago to bring people's awareness of the angel and the whole purpose of
it. Tell them what it looked like.
It looks like an angel. It's an angel on a rock. It's the side of the mountain. It's actually an angel. It's carved in there. He said it was not done by man. It's just there. And it's not like it's something. He just says it's not done by anybody from here. What that means, I mean, it's. I couldn't see it close enough to see if it was a natural formation, but it didn't look like it. It actually looked like a carving in the side of a mountain.
Yeah, but that
wasn't
long
done.
Ago, who would have carved it that long
exactly.
ago?
Exactly. And so he's saying it's not done by man, or at least not by our current civilizations or something.
Did it have wings or
had
what?
Wings, had the whole bit. It had the wings spread out. See, they followed the lay of the mountain, and then it had the body in the middle. But to me, when I was looking at, because that's what he does, he'll bring people there and just says, do you get any messages? What is it telling you? And, you know, I wish I could say, oh, it was this big spiritual awakening or something, but it wasn't. I was just getting that it was pointing away. I was getting something different than what he gets from it, because he feels like it's looking over across from it over to this. I can't remember where he said it was looking to, but what I got from it is that it was pointing out into the sky.
Oh, okay.
And so it was pointing over this other direction, because that's the direction its head was, and it made you look up into the sky.
Mm.
So that's what I got. Now, the other thing was over to the left of it, and this took a little bit to see it. The angel was very clear. It was just, it jumps out at you. But over to the left, it on the side of this other mountain, is the profile of Jesus.
Huh.
Well, let me put it this way. It's a profile of a bearded man. He feels it's Jesus, but it's definitely a bearded man. And again, he sees it as looking at something almost the same direction that this angel is looking. So whatever is that, this is a message.
Is it carved or is it outcropping of rock?
It's actually an outcropping of rock. Okay, it's not carved. The other thing with the angel that I forgot to mention was he said the message of the angel was that when she begins to fade, that's when people need to get to higher ground, because that is when there's something, there's water is coming to Palm Springs and you need to get to higher ground.
And that's desert.
Yes. Absolutely. But it's like that's when, you know, it's like when you see me fade, get high, get higher ground. And yeah. That's why, to me, maybe that's why she's pointing up. You know, it's just the same, she's pointing up. So
okay.
I said she's pointing to the top of this other mountain was part of it, So which was the highest one. But anyway.
What else? Those are the two main things that were part of that tour?
That was the first part. Then we leave from there and we go through this place that everything, it's built over this huge lake. So every place in that, every home, every property has a hot spring, because you go down, you tap into this lake, which is all hot water. And so we went through there, and then we went over to, we went to the San Andreas Fault. I was walking on the San Andreas Fault, is what it was. So, but it's part of it, because that goes a long ways, but it was right there.
It goes all the way up to the coast of California.
Right, and there's these two oases that were there from, and it was really interesting to learn how this happened, is because that fault, again, here's that water, you know, the fault moves and water comes up through the fault. And so then because of that water coming to the surface, then there you have an oasis. That's where all these trees grow. I mean, all of a sudden you just have a bunch of palm trees and all this lush greenery. It's jungle of palm trees. And it's from the water seeping through where the fault line moves, where it keeps moving. And they said they'll have, you know, they said they're tiny tremors. It's just constantly moving.
Mm.
But it's just these pockets. You know, it's not all the way along the line. It's just these pockets.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, the first one you go in, and it's a park. It's been, actually, it's privately owned property. But this man, he bought it, and it's staying in his family so that nobody will commercialize it. It will stay as it has always been. And so and nobody does anything to it. They only come in and do any cutting if trees have fallen down and they just want to clear it out, and that's it. Otherwise, it's really primitive looking because it's not kept. It's not like the other palm trees where they've trimmed them all up and they look nice and pretty. I mean, these things have huge beards and they just look like prehistoric trees. They look ancient, you know. So, but his thing was, you go in there and then you walk from there to this other oasis, which is about, I'm trying to think how far it was. It was 15-20 minute walk across the sand over there to it. And that one had what they call a cathedral, because these trees form the circle. And so it's like a beautiful area to meditate, and it's got wonderful energy in there. And then they were calling them the council. These trees, they felt like a council. And he was saying it was like a council. Each one represented a country or something. They had different personalities. Well, I got something different when I went there. So, and that was the thing. It was like to take you there and see what you get. See what you pick up. What messages do you get?
It's like last year, all those vortex spots you saw too.
Right,
so
exactly.
And keep finding these things nobody knows about.
And what's good about that is it's teaching me how to kind of, just how, it's really hard to explain because it's so wispy, this veil or this dimensional stuff. It's like you can see through it, or you're able to see a little bit, but it's just so, it's not concrete like our 3D is here. It's not that firm. It's just this very, it's a little different than what I get visually in my third eye. It's a whole other thing that I see. And so that's what I've been seeing in these things, in these places. And in this one, it was really cool because as we approached, and he made a comment, he said, this is sacred land, and you have to ask permission to go into these trees. You have to ask, and you could feel right where it started. I mean, he said it, and that was definitely right where it started. It was quite a ways from the trees. You could see them. And so we asked permission. You know, you just ask it mentally. And then you could feel it when it was eased, and you could go in. I mean, all this you could feel.
What would happen if it wouldn't want you in there?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. But I think just by asking, well, I think people go in there all the time. Regular tourists go in there. And he said he's been in there many times, and these kids have come in with their games and all that stuff, making all kinds of noise. And he said the trees shut down. They completely shut down their energy. And he's in there trying to meditate, and they're doing all this noise, and you can feel it. They just shut down their energy. So that's what happens. They won't allow you to see them.
A lot of people don't feel the energy anyway.
Right, right. Well, and if they're just coming in there and talking and stuff, you know,
You
have to appreciate it. And I'm being reminded of some of the things I was told that happened that I'd actually forgotten about. So this is really cool. We went in, and he was just like, you know, we walked in, and we went into the center area where the cathedral was, and he's like, people will just come in here and meditate, just see if you get anything, any messages. As we were actually walking in, I heard one of the trees saying, welcome home. And I'm like, okay, a tree is talking to me. So I was telling him, I said, well, I just heard welcome home, and I'm thinking, I don't feel anything toward this place, so I don't know what that was, you know. But anyway, it was just little messages like that. But go into the area that he calls the cathedral, which is gorgeous, and this one spot, I walked in there and it's just wham, I got hit with this energy. But it's only in like one spot, just like you put an X on the ground and that's where you step and that's it, you know, and stuff. And so he's like, well, just go wherever you're guided to and just, you know, do whatever you want. And so I was guided to actually go outside of the circle of trees. And there was a little knoll, a little, like a sandy knoll there. And you would stand on it and tell me to turn my back to the trees. And when I did, it felt like the council of beings that I have felt when I had a session. It was beings that were behind me that are them that talks to me, okay? Hmm. And then I was hearing council of nine. And I looked around and I thought, well, there's more than nine trees here, but there are a lot of trees, which is really cool, is these trees would hold hands. I've never seen anything like this.
Their limbs, the palms, whatever they call it.
When they come down and they are drying out, they actually interlace with the ones from the tree next to them. It looks like they're holding hands. And then they do this all the way down. And then they are combined. It's like they have merged. You could see families. Oh, goodness. Oh, I'm feeling them right now. You could see the families. There was like a mother and a father, and then they had a little baby in between and among them.
A
little baby palm tree right in the middle of them, and they were protecting. The other ones, it was like a community, and they were all protecting this little baby that was coming up. It was just wild things like that. Anyway, I was asking them for messages, just like, what, you know, if you're my counsel, then what? And so I got a few little messages. One of the things I remember that I forgot to tell you about was that they told me that they were connected to the trees here. And so all I have to do is, see, that's what they were trying to tell me was, this is why you are in the woods where you live. Is because it's the same thing. It's the trees, and they were connected to the trees here. So all I had to do was get close to the trees, and I can be right back in connection with them.
Yeah, this is in one of my books. They talking about how the trees talk to each other because they're a group soul. It don't matter. All the trees in the world communicate with each other.
Absolutely,
because they're a group soul.
Yeah, and then when I was telling Frederick some of the message I was getting about them being a council and everything, then I heard them laughing. They said, we just look like trees. And I'm like, oh, my God, what am I in right now? You know, it was just as weird, you know. I mean, but to anybody else, if you were just walking through there, you're walking through a group of trees. But I was just, it was just this other thing that we really, really, really need to be open to. I mean, otherwise, okay, this is my imagination. But what if it's not? I was hearing stuff. And I feel like this is the beginning of stepping into this other realm of what's there. You know, it's a matter of looking beyond what your eyes want to see.
Yeah.
And trusting it. Just trust it.
This is part of the veil thinning.
Absolutely.
And to raise the consciousness, and as we're moving upward anyway.
Absolutely.
Becoming more and more aware of these things.
Just be open to anything. It may not look like what you thought it was going to look like, and that definitely was not what I was thinking anything would be, but it's just be open to it, and then accept it. Allow it and accept it, and who knows what will happen.
Well, you were really lucky because you were the only one.
Yeah, it was a private tour, and then we were the only ones out there because it was in the middle of the summer. He said, this is in the middle of the winter. It's really populated, but here it was hot. Nobody else was there. It was fantastic. It was fantastic.
You want to tell his name again in case anybody wants to go there? Yeah. Be an interesting tour.
Right.
Little known place.
Absolutely. Frederick Delarue, D-E-L-A-R-U. It's French. He's from France. So it's the French spelling of Frederick. But Frederick Delarue, a fantastic man. He's so sincere and very humble. You know, he's out there. He says this is his mission, is to bring people here, to help people to make this connection. And mainly it's to get people to understand the angel on the rock, you know. So, but it's just a wonderful experience.
Yeah, and you
experience.
Said the people who lived there didn't even know anything about these
Absolutely.
Things.
Absolutely. And he composes, and he says it's not him composing it, but the most beautiful music.
Well, we know that it comes from the creative part of your mind.
Right.
Nobody knows where anything.
Right.
They write songs, they write books, they do sculptures, and it's the creative part.
Right.
And we never know where it comes from.
Mm-hmm. No.
Okay. But anyway, that was fantastic there.
Mm-hmm.
Then we go back to Sedona, and we've been there last year.
Right.
But this time we went to Sedona, it was different. And Dee met up with us there again.
Right.
But every time we've gone to Sedona before, it's always had a very strong energy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, last year it was waves of energy that were just, I felt like I was being bombarded constantly with these waves.
And every time I've gone there, they always said that it, whatever energy, whatever emotion you go in there with into Sedona, it's amplified. So some people can be extremely angry, and they don't know what they're angry about, different things like that, because it's the emotion is amplified. Because, you know, there was never supposed to ever be any white men living in Sedona. It was the Indian sacred ground, and where they only did their ceremonies and their rituals, and they weren't supposed to be anybody there.
Well, and all you have to do is go there, and you know it's sacred. I mean, you can feel these actual sacred places. That's just like those trees. I mean, you could feel that they were sacred. This place, you can feel it's sacred. You can see it. I mean, you know it's something very, very special. You know, just mm-hmm. look at it. That's like Dee was saying, you know, that's how the Indians knew there was a God. I mean, you look at these mountains. You know there's a God.
The red
and you look
mountains.
At them. Yeah.
Because all of a sudden, here are these red rocks in the middle of these other mountains. Like,
right.
where did they all come
mm-hmm.
from? But anyway, the energy has always been very strong. I always wondered how people could live in that kind of energy. But this time, mm-hmm. it was different.
It was different.
I didn't feel it. And you said you felt it differently.
I felt it differently. I didn't feel it like the waves. It wasn't a conflicting energy at all. It was something that was very, it was actually like I was riding the energy, and it was just felt very, very good.
Yeah.
Very at peace.
Yeah, it wasn't the other conflicting energy mm-hmm. as it was before.
And I noticed, and I didn't say anything about this, and I noticed it later, when we left there and we got to Phoenix, that's when I felt bombarded. It was just like, that's when I really noticed the difference.
All the people
when
there.
When we first went to Sedona, it was like, it was just, it, where before, that was where you noticed the energy. But here, but this time it was very comfortable. And then I went to Phoenix and I felt like I was just, it was so much noise. It was when we got to the airport, so many people, there's so much noise. It was their energy. It was a very tugging at all these places. And it was like I just wanted to get away.
But
I have to go.
We were thinking maybe it was different with Sedona because everything is shifting. Everything is mm-hmm. changing. Maybe this was proof mm-hmm. that we have changed. We have raised our vibrations,
right.
changed our vibrations, and it's done so slowly and so subtle that we don't even know when it's happening.
Well, and it's like that is the energy of where we, I mean, that was so comfortable where before I noticed it, and it was just that. So that's how people live there. They raise their vibrations, and they live there.
So we're thinking that probably what happened, we raised our vibrations to the point that now we can notice it when we went there, and it was not uncomfortable at all.
No.
Very
no.
beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I was glad when we got to the end and we were going to finally go home. Because it's not easy to get to Sedona. We had to fly into Phoenix.
Oh, it's not hard.
And then you drive. Well, it's not. We
it's
were
not
used
hard.
To flying things in Denver. We had to drive up there.
Yeah, it's a beautiful drive, too.
Yeah, through the mountains.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, that was a six-week around the United States tour. Oh, and when we were in... Was it in Sedona that we had all the people there from all over the world were in the class?
Yes, I could, yeah. From Japan, Thailand, Brazil, Canada. I just now did the class list.
Someplace in South America. There was a whole lot of different countries there.
Yeah, I know. It was, like, amazing.
And
the world was represented.
And the funny thing is that they're listening to this show, too, all over the world.
Absolutely.
And that, I think that will make Don happy, the one who puts this on, that we keep having verification that mm-hmm. they say, oh, yeah, we listen to it
right.
in all of these countries.
Right.
And they came for the class, and I kept saying, well, I'm going to, but once in Japan and Thailand, I said, I'm going to do a class in another month, a couple of months in Singapore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he said, well, he didn't want to wait that long. So
right.
he'd come all the way to the States to take the class.
Right, yeah. What they do.
And the next class I'm going to be doing is in Sweden. And we had a man come from Spain and somewhere else over there. And I said, well, why don't you just take it in Sweden or in England? The same thing. He wanted to come to the States.
Yeah, I mean, once you're guided, you're guided. You're guided because that's how I follow my guidance. And that's the best way to go right now. You just follow your guidance.
Uh-huh.
You're really in touch when you do that. So you just follow it. If you've got the guidance to go now, then go now. Go do that class right now, whatever, right now. That's what you're told to do. Do it. So there's a reason.
Well, we do now. We've been finding more and more out there where we live here in Arkansas. It's a vortex because we live on top of the largest crystal deposit in the world.
Yeah.
We didn't even really put two and two together.
No.
But the crystals here in Brazil is where they get all the crystals from. But I guess that's why we've had the peaceful energy. We like to come back here. I say it recharges my battery. It's my retreat. To come back here after we travel the world.
Right.
It's nice and beautiful and quiet, and the woods around the house and the deer in the front yard.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay, but it looks like we're coming up to time again, and I wanted to fill you in on this because everywhere we go, we seem to find things that are different. So we're going to have 2 weeks where we will be live before we start out
again.
Two more weeks before we start out again. So anyway, we'll be live again next week. We're going to have Guy Needler, who wrote The History of God, and he's going to be calling. We're going to call him in England.
Yeah, and that'll be really good. He was at the conference. It's fantastic material. So.
Okay, so that'll be next week. So anyway, we're back now. We made it back safely into the oven. We're so hot. So thanks for listening tonight. And don't forget to check our website, OzarkMountain.com, the Ozark Mountain Publishing, OzarkMT.com. Okay, thanks for listening. Good night, everybody.
Make it great.